Welcome to the Echo Chamber Club podcast. Hi everyone, my name is Alice Thwaite and I'm the founder and editor of the Echo Chamber Club. This is the Echo Chamber Club podcast, where we talk to key thinkers about what being centrist, liberal and tolerant means to them. The idea being that we can consolidate our own views and make them as strong as they possibly can be. So the first three shows were incredibly well received by our subscribers. We spoke with Claire Fox about humanism, Yoshi Herman about the values of millennials on university campuses, and Roy Field Brown about race, class and society. So please go back and check them out if you haven't already. They're all on echochamber.club and we're also on iTunes. And I know that a couple of you guys have written to me and said that you've submitted them to other podcasts as well. So thank you. And it's worth mentioning at this point that the podcast complements the newsletter, where we present a strong version of views that sit outside of a liberal and progressive bubble, so that we're aware of what other people are thinking. So you can sign up at the Echo Chamber Club. Right, so that's all the admin done, and so I can get on to the best part of the show, which is talking to the guest. And today I've got someone really interesting and inspirational on the show. I'm on a Skype call with Bex Stinson, and Bex is the head of trans inclusion at Stonewall. This is the charity that campaigns for LGBT equality and offers support to individuals in the UK and abroad. She wants to empower individuals, transform institutions and change laws. And given she holds a first-class master's in law and is a trained barrister, she's exactly the right person to do it. So, Bex, hi, welcome to the show, and thanks for being with us.
Hi, Alice, thank you. It's really nice to kind of be here to talk to you about this. I'm intrigued to see where the questions go.
Me too. I'm intrigued to see what you say. So let's kick it off by talking about equality, because equality is a notion that a lot of our listeners and subscribers believe in, but it has a lot of different applications and implications. So I'd really like to understand what equality means on a practical and granular level for you.
Okay. I think to me as an individual, equality is about making sure, without trying to use too many buzzwords, it's just about making sure that people are able to be themselves and be accepted for who they are, and have the same opportunities as everybody else and not face any form of discrimination. And then that really ties into kind of Stonewall's tagline, acceptance without exception. Equality is about people being seen as human beings first and foremost. It's not about making sure that everybody achieves the same. It's about making sure that everybody has the same opportunities and has the same great start in life and great opportunities in life, regardless of kind of personal characteristics and things like that.
Okay. And so you talked a lot about opportunity there as well. How are we falling short at the moment? So just again, really laying out the problem in the most granular terms, what opportunities do LGBT individuals face or not face compared to, I suppose, heterosexual or cis counterparts?
It's great. I love the fact that you used cis there as well, bringing it into the vocab. Yes, I think that LGBT, it's perhaps better to say why they don't get those opportunities or why they're not in a position to have the same opportunities. And I think LGBT people still face discrimination. And they still face homophobia, biphobia, transphobia every day. You see it on the street. You also see it in the workplace. We work with organizations here at Stonewall, and they take part in our Equality Workplace Index, which measures the things that businesses do to attempt to push equality within their own organizations. And we work with them to make that better, to improve their results. But the reason that LGBT people still face that kind of disparity in opportunity is because they're faced with homophobia, biphobia, and transphobia. They're faced with perceptions that people still have, even though laws have changed, even though Marriage Same-Sex Couples Act has passed, even though we have a gender recognition law now. Things haven't changed, and part of Stonewall's work and part of my work and what I want to do is change hearts and minds. And I don't think we're at the point where we've changed hearts and minds yet. And as a result of that, people still have misconceptions about what it is to be LGBT. And that's always going to be a bar to people having the same opportunities.
Okay, so it's very much kind of human rights stuff. So it's very much like having the right to work, having the right to education. Is there anything else that you would add to that list as well? Or are those the two main areas that you focus on?
Well, I think that it's difficult to pin down what I focus on, and I guess what Stonewall focuses on, but it's about ensuring that people are accepted in whatever they do in life for who they are. So be that somebody who is attempting to get the same level of education or attempting to progress their career. It's not about that. It's about accepting the person for who they are in whatever they do. And that means we have to tackle a lot of issues across a lot of areas, which is why I think it's integral that we focus on changing hearts and minds in the end.
Okay, cool. When it comes to changing hearts and minds, I can imagine that there's kind of a group of people who are potentially listening to this podcast right now who would claim that their heart's already changed. Is there, how do you go about the business of kind of reaching out to other people who, I'll use the word, sit outside of this kind of echo chamber? What kind of work are you doing there? So how can other people work in a similar way to how you are?
I think the whole point of what we do is to reach out kind of beyond the echo chamber, if you like, beyond the bubble. Of course, we have lots of people who hear us, speak with us, campaign with us, volunteer with us, and are already on side. And they have brilliant hearts and minds who accept LGBT individuals for who they are. The challenge for us is reaching out to communities which may not understand what it is to accept LGBT people, and in areas where it's difficult. So we do things such as our empowerments team at the moment working with schools, faith schools particularly, to try and understand what it is to be LGBT inclusive in a faith school. That can be quite challenging, but it's a common misconception that faith and LGBT individuals can't be at peace or at harmony. There are a lot of people of faith who are LGBT. It's the same in kind of particular environments in the workplace that you may find it difficult, or the military was always a challenge, but now have come on leaps and bounds and are amazing at kind of promoting LGBT equality and work with us on a regular basis. It really all depends on the environment. We've done a huge campaign with Rainbow Laces because in sport, we find that it can be quite challenging to have LGBT inclusion at a grassroots level as well as at kind of top Premiership League level. So we do a lot of work like that that outreaches in a way that people don't ordinarily expect to see LGBT on the cards. Sports fans going to a football game may not expect to see a Premier League match flying rainbow laces and flags, but that's what we do to kind of make sure we're reaching out beyond the Stonewall bubble and beyond the organisations that we work with ordinarily.
That's really cool work. It's really interesting, particularly when you said it when it comes to faith schools as well, because I suppose that's kind of an area where people think that values clash.
Yes.
Would you say that you kind of make an appeal to humanism on that kind of front? Like, how do you go about and find that common ground and that understanding?
It definitely is reaching out to the human inside people and the humanist principles, but we often find when we engage with faith communities as well as faith schools that there are a lot of individuals who are LGBT and who are what we would term allies, and they're really good allies, not because they kind of go against the grain of their faith, but because they embrace their faith in a way that means they understand people should be accepted and loved. I have no particular faith myself, and sometimes I'm full of the same misconceptions and preconceptions about someone of faith as anybody else, and think that they may not accept LGBT people for who they are. But I've had that view challenged several times. And in the work that I do, I come across people of all different faiths who are embracing of other identities, sexualities, and it's really reaffirming. It's about speaking to them on that humanist level and engaging them in a way that makes sense to them. So the whole point of the work that we're doing with faith schools is so that students at those schools can see what Stonewall does in a way that's not immediately contradictory to the principles of their faith. That's not what we're trying to do. We're not trying to challenge their faith in any way at all. We're trying to get them to see that LGBT people can be as much a part of their faith as any other faith or any other walk of life.
And I think that is what is so required right now on every level in 2017, is trying to find that common ground. Bringing it back to kind of events that have definitely happened this week. So to let our listeners know, we're recording this on the 25th of January. There's been, Trump's just been inaugurated. There's been an awful lot of legislation that's going through right now that people are finding very troubling, such as the Planned Parenthood stuff. What are your kind of fears for, given what happened in 2016, are there any particular fears that you have, and how are you trying to combat that? How are you trying to kind of keep your values open, keep the message of Stonewall alive, whilst operating in a certainly a more hostile kind of political environment?
I think all we can really do is continue the way we always have. Sometimes we need to get louder. Sometimes we need to make sure that we're more visible. And that's definitely, we're definitely at one of those points in time now. 2016, I think it's fair to say, didn't exactly end on a high note for people who were fond of equality and people who support kind of LGBT rights. And it was seen as a dark time for people who are LGBT and who are fighting for greater acceptance. But I think what we need to be aware of is that there's always been challenges throughout history, and we need to just make sure we're maintaining pressure, we're remaining visible, and we're continuing down the same road. It does mean sometimes that we have to change the way we frame the message, or we have to approach different people, and we have to reach out in ways we haven't done before. But it doesn't mean it's impossible, and it doesn't mean we can't continue to do it. I worry that LGBT individuals and organizations and communities will be very discouraged, I think, by the events of the end of 2016 and the start of 2017. But what I would say to them is that feeling discouraged is what happens as a result of the events of the last 12 months. What we need to do is focus on where we go from here, and Stonewall and I am very keen to make sure that that is what we think about going forward. There's no point in us kind of stopping or letting up because we feel discouraged. Now is the time where we keep pushing, we become more visible, and we express ourselves in ways we probably haven't done before. And that's what Stonewall has been doing since Christmas and the New Year. We've been reaching out, we've been staying visible, and we're demonstrating that we're still here. It's what we need to do.
What a great response. particularly when you spoke about kind of different communities, I suppose that we can all take from this kind of a positive, which is that there are different people out there who perhaps we haven't focused on before, perhaps the people who aren't going to football matches, who we need to speak to as well. So we all need to kind of readjust how we define those people as well, and kind of make sure that we're all totally more inclusive as a society. Would you say is a fair assessment of what you're working on and what you've just said?
Definitely. We can't kind of sit back and think that because we've reached out to certain individuals or a particular group of people that work is done. We have to be able to speak to people on their level and understand what their concerns are, and also find a way to communicate with them that makes them realize that things like LGBT rights are nothing to be afraid of, and that we're not trying to challenge their views. We're just trying to create a world where people are accepted without exception. And although it sounds very simplistic and very straightforward, I'm sure you're aware that it becomes far more complicated than that. But I would definitely agree that that's what we're trying to do, reaching out to communities that we haven't done before and in ways we haven't done before to make sure that the message gets through to them.
So to bring this back to potentially a more technical level, actually, because you are a trained barrister, so you really do have an excellent understanding of UK law. What are the kind of the laws which are causing trans the most pain at the moment? Are there particular things that we need to read up on? Because laws are something you can campaign against, right? So is there anything that you're working on that front at the moment?
Yes, there definitely is. The main piece of legislation for trans people, which is always an issue, is the Gender Recognition Act, which was passed in 2004. It's on the face of it, it was a very progressive piece of legislation. It was passed at a time when we had no legal recognition for people who were trans, transgender, or however they identified. There was no way of recognizing them at the time. And so that piece of legislation was an amazing step forward, and it enabled people to have their gender identity recognized in law. The problem with it is that it places restrictions and it places requirements on people who seek to have their gender recognized. Those requirements now are outdated, and it forces trans people to jump through loopholes to achieve that recognition in a way that I hope, when I say cisgender, I hope people understand what I mean. I in a way that cis people do not need to jump through those loopholes. Their gender identity is automatically recognized, and as a result, that's a huge there's a huge kind of separation between what it is to be cis and what it is to be trans in a legal context. That creates a lot of friction, not just for trans individuals, but for the organizations that work with people or who have trans employees. And it also means that it causes problems when people are trying to get a passport or when they're trying to get any form of identification, frankly. It also causes problems when customers of businesses try and use their services. And the problem that we have with the Gender Recognition Act is because it's outdated, trans people no longer wish to rely on it to the same degree they did in the first few years after it was passed. So trans people now are coming forward and saying, look, I want my gender to be recognized, but I don't want to have to go through this process because other people who aren't trans don't have to go through that process. And the same can be said for people who are non-binary, because the Gender Recognition Act does not account for identities that aren't male or female. So that means that it's not just someone who transitions and is happy being identified as a male or a female person. It also means that all non-binary identities are excluded from the ability to be recognized as well. And we have countries around the world, for example, Malta in 2015, who are passing pieces of legislation which are incredibly progressive and no longer place any requirements on trans people to undergo any medical transition or to undergo any treatments, no diagnosis. It requires them to do no kind of formalities of changing gender. It's recognizing people's gender identity for what it is, and it's changing the legal framework around someone's gender identity rather than forcing people into those boxes. That's going to be a huge step if we get anywhere near that in the UK. But the point is that other countries around the world are doing that. And that just kind of demonstrates that for the UK to remain a leader in LGBT rights and equality, it needs to step up its game.
So that was incredibly interesting, because it's something that I haven't heard of before. Just to really potentially ask quite a silly question though, but when you talk about recognition, does that, and you spoke about, you know, not having legal documents, like how would you describe recognition, like to be recognized? Is that kind of is it like on a could you just go into a little bit more depth there, just so to make sure that potentially the subscribers completely understand it, but just what that means and how that impacts who you are and makes you feel accepted, that sort of thing.
Definitely. I think the big one is having ID and the ability to present your gender to organizations and for them not to question it. That's what recognition looks like. And for somebody who doesn't go through the process in the Gender Recognition Act, they don't obtain what's called a gender recognition certificate.
And the which process, do you mean that that's a medical process, or is it kind of writing forms out? Again, I haven't come across this before.
It's okay. So the process is, I'm sorry to have to kind of, I know there's loads of detail, so I don't want to get too technical. The process is that there must be a diagnosis of gender dysphoria, which is the medical condition associated with many trans individuals. And they must have sign-off approval to say that they're going to remain in the gender in which they identify for the rest of their lives.
Gosh, and so go, it's totally humiliating.
Yes, and then you have to go before a gender recognition panel who decide whether or not you deserve a gender recognition certificate. So it is a very complicated, and it is a very degrading process for trans people. And then following that, when you have that certificate, you're then able to amend your birth certificate with that. And as such, you're entitled to the same recognition as anybody who's not trans. So your documentation can automatically be changed. The problem is that we have to go through that process in the first place. And what tends to happen is that for someone like me who doesn't have a gender recognition certificate at the moment, I'm forced to deal with companies questioning my gender identity. I'm forced to deal with government departments doing the same. I'm forced to try and update my records with companies, which can be very difficult. Especially when if you're a trans woman who like me sounds a little bit like an agitated bumblebee trapped in a tumble dryer, what tends to happen is that organizations such as your bank will get a phone call from you, as I've done in the past, and they will lock your accounts down because they don't believe you're the account holder, because the name on the account is you know, Miss Rebecca. And so then you have to go in and take identification in and explain in branch what's going on. And it's very humiliating. So there's lots of issues. And recognition itself will not be achieved until trans people don't have to prove what their gender identity is.
Yeah, that's totally cleared up everything. Because it's one of these things that if you don't experience it, then you've got no idea of what other people are being forced to go through. So I really appreciate you giving a lot of detail there. That sounds like it. So it's the Gender Recognition Act. It was passed in 2004, and it's something that you're fighting to have amended and updated and modernized.
Correct.
So yeah. Everyone remember that. finally, a question that we like to ask people, because we are the Echo Chamber Club, and the idea is that we do speak to people like you, but we also like to offer routes so that you can learn more about these type of topics. What would you recommend to a subscriber who wants to learn more about trans inclusion, about trans rights, and about campaigns that that are going on, whether it's 2017 or 2019?
I think a good way is to kind of make yourself aware of organizations that work on trans issues. And there are a few. Stonewall is a recent kind of new kid on the block when it comes to trans equality, because we've had a lot of problems in the past without or going through a period where we weren't trans inclusive. But in addition to Stonewall, you have organizations like Gendered Intelligence who work with trans people and education services. You also have organizations such as DIRES, which works on researching and trans individuals on the whole. There's organizations such as Mermaids, who've been in the press recently. They work with young people who are trans. There are lots of organizations out there, and there are a lot of Twitter feeds out there as well. So Stonewall generally points people in the direction of other organizations and individuals who try to represent what it is to be trans. And Stonewall's Twitter feed will constantly update on what's going on with trans events that we're attending, places that I would be attending and speaking to. But it tends to be very underground because people don't see trans as being mainstream. For example, last week I attended the opening of the Museum of Transology, when that is being held at the Fashion Space Gallery, which is at the London College of Fashion. And that is an exhibit which has everything associated with a trans person live from 100 different trans people. So they've collected everything from pieces of clothing to medicine boxes to letters from gender identity clinics and psychiatrists through to particular bits of evidence, toys, books, and all of these items are there for you to kind of feel and see what it's like to be a trans person. And I would recommend, if people have no idea what it is and what you go through kind of when you're growing up and living a life as a trans person, the Museum of Transology would be a very good call. But keeping in touch with things like my Twitter feed and Stonewall's Twitter feed, we push that kind of information out there all the time. It's also a good idea to link up with organizations that aren't specifically trans, or to listen to other podcasts or shows that aren't specifically trans but talk about trans inclusion. So things like Kicking the Curiarchy, which is a big one for me, is an absolutely fantastic podcast, which is a feminist podcast but deals with trans inclusion in a very brilliant way. And they deal with issues that you perhaps wouldn't think of immediately when you consider feminism and what it is to kind of oppose oppression in that way. So anything that kind of pushes the edges of the mind when it comes to gender identity is a good way to go.
That I think that Museum of Transology sounds great. So it's something, I am in London at the moment, so it's something I'll definitely head down to. But Bex, thank you so much for coming on the show and being so open with us about what equality means, what we should be fighting for, and how we can strengthen what it means to be tolerant and to be more accepting, especially in a time where it seems very difficult to be that. So thank you so much for chatting with me today.
That's brilliant, Alice. I really appreciated it. I hope I haven't confused people too much with the terminology that goes on, but I'm glad to have been able to speak to you about it. It's good.
We can offer some translations at the bottom if you go to echochamber.club just go to echochamber.club and you'll find the podcast there. But yeah, thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thank you.
It was great to chat to Bex Stinson this week. And if you have any questions for Bex or comments for the team here, then please do email me at editor@echochamber.club or tweet Bex. I'm sure she'll get back to you. So I just wanted to review some of the fantastic comments we had about the last show. So Neil emailed us and told us that he loved Claire Fox's articulation of humanism. Henry sent us a WhatsApp to say Yoshi's point of view on millennials is bang on, and it's given him a lot of food for thought on improving discourses in millennial campuses. And so I think he's referring to Exeter University here in the UK. Amy emailed in to ask whether or not we could have more guests discussing what a class system looks like in modern day Britain as a result of Royfield Brown's comments in episode 3. And I would personally also add Europe and the US to that too. So if you know of any guests that we should interview, then give us a bell. It's also so good to see some 5-star reviews coming through on iTunes. So thank you for that. And specifically to Christophosaurus and TallyB123 for your lovely comments. I'm pretty sure those aren't your real names, but thank you anyway. And finally, thank you for listening. Please do tell your friends about us. As I said before, kind of send us in your recommendations for guests we should interview or topics that we should cover. And we'll carry on strengthening what a liberal, progressive and centre-ground politics and dialogue should be in 2017 and further into the future. Thanks. Thanks for listening to the Echo Chamber Club podcast. I'm Alice Thwaite. This episode was produced by Rebecca Houston. Music by Emmanuel Dacer and Ruth Now. Subscribe on iTunes and Google Play. Please find the rest of our content and contact details on echochamber.club.